We got Max Orr here in the studio right now. He's the executive director of Carolina Public Humanities for another round of Oh the Humanities, taking a look at humanities research scholarship and upcoming events on campus. I've also got a special guest here in the studio, which I will let Max introduce in just a second. Max, good to have you with us again.
I'm back. You can't seem to keep me away.
Can't get rid of. Well, you keep coming back. I don't know.
Well, it's Oh the Humanities. It's what you probably say every time. Oh the Humanities.
The Humanities. Yeah.
Well, I always bring you gifts. My gifts are related to time. That's what we do as historians. And on this day in 1594, today is, of course, February 19th, I know you know this, Sigismund III of the House of Vasa became the king of Sweden after the death of his father, John III, who had obtained the throne after rebellion against his half-brother. And Sigismund only lasted as king of Sweden for 5 years because he, too, was deposed, this time by a rebellion by the parliament. He continued on to be king of Poland. So if you can't get Sweden, you can be king of Poland still.
Sounds about right.
But yes, Sigismund, I know that everyone is probably thinking of that today, maybe in Sweden. it also is a birthday. It's the birthday of David Garrick in 1717. He was an actor, playwright, and producer. He popularized Shakespeare in the 18th century. Of course, he was already popular, but he was perhaps the most famous and popular of the Shakespearean actors. He tried to bring some quote-unquote regularity in the texts. He was also known for his particular style of acting, that he was a dramatic and emotional performer as opposed to what he called the bombastic recitation of earlier iterations of on the stage. Reverend Nicholas Tyndall said about his acting, "The deaf hear him in his action and the blind see him in his voice."
I like it.
And now you might wonder, what does Sigismund III and David Garrick have in common?
It's as if we're segueing into Shakespeare somehow.
Did you get this?
I kind of started picking up on a theme.
Scandinavian intrigue and then the stage, which is a great way to introduce our guest, is Mary Floyd Wilson. She is the Bowman and Gordon Gray Distinguished Term Professor and the chair of the Department of English and Comparative Literature, and a dear friend on the Faculty Advisory Board, even of Carolina Public Humanities. Welcome, Mary Floyd Wilson.
Why, thank you.
And this weekend, we have a seminar coming up that we have kind of called Shakespeare New Perspectives, which is kind of a bland name, I have to admit. But but I also call it Shakespeare Plays with Mourning, because Mary Floyd Wilson is going to be talking a lot about Hamlet and Twelfth Night, and why are they important plays for understanding mourning?
And that's mourning with a U.
That is mourning with a U, yes.
Mourning, tragedy, sorrow, yeah.
What we might call grief, yes. Well, they're important plays in part because of when they were written or composed. They seem to have been written around the time that Shakespeare's father died or was dying. Interestingly enough, Twelfth Night is about twins. Shakespeare had twins, a boy and a girl, but the boy had died. And the play itself is about the sense that a twin has died but then is brought back to life. So that's one of the subjects that I'll be addressing, is the desire to see people come back to life, and that drama allows that to happen.
When did that happen in Shakespeare's life?
When did he actually encounter the dead?
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the theater, right? So we have the ghost in Hamlet, where Hamlet believes that this is his father. But what's interesting about that play in relation to grief and mourning is that at the time they were at a crossroads of understanding what happened to the dead, and they had lost the sense of purgatory existing because of the shift from Catholicism to Protestantism.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so the relationship between the living and the dead is fraught at the time that Shakespeare wrote Hamlet. So the question of what a ghost is very interesting. A ghost could be your father, or a ghost could be the devil. There to infect you, and your own emotions and your emotional response then to the representation of the dead actually had something to say about whether you were saved or damned.
So the questions
are pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So there's like different sort of presentations of death and the afterlife in different Shakespearean plays, and I know your own work focuses on the extent to which those ideas were shifting and changing at the time, right?
Yes, and I'm really interested in the way belief affects emotion. And I think that one of the advantages of studying literature in a historical context is it's a place for us to think about historicizing emotion. Mm-hmm. So if you believe that it's possible for your prayers to have an effect on the dead and to, you know, send them to heaven, and then that's taken away from you, then what does that mean to grieve and mourn? And in fact, at the time, people were told that it was impious to mourn too long, that you were, in fact, doubting God if you were spending time in grief.
Wow.
And so there, what do you do when you lose a family member? Of course, you're going to feel sad, but then your sadness is infected somehow with doubt and skepticism and fear. So it is interesting to trace how these this emotional terrain is affected by what people believed. And they weren't quite sure what to believe. I mean, that's what's fascinating about Hamlet, is that it's a play about not knowing what to believe.
Mm-hmm. So these are really heady ideas, and I'm wondering, how does Shakespeare, you know, skirt the balance between, I mean, how much intentionally do you think he's thinking about these ideas, or these are the substrate or context in which people are, the society and the culture? How do you square these heady ideas with providing an entertaining product on the stage?
Do you mean the lecture or the play?
Well, that's up to you on Saturday, yes. Let's start with the play.
Well, it's interesting because I think that both Twelfth Night and Hamlet give comic and tragic perspectives on very similar subjects. And so to answer your first question, how much is he thinking about this, meaning Shakespeare, and how much is the culture sort of just saturated? I mean, I think it's both. And I think that, you know, if you're in a culture where certain rites or rituals are now being stripped away and are, you know, condemned, and you're trying to find a way to process things, that's necessarily going to go into your art, right? That's going to go into your writing, and I think that there's a way in which both plays are about that. But they're also about how does a comic or tragic perspective shift in thinking about these questions of death and life. Surprisingly enough, there's comedy and tragedy in each play. Mm-hmm. So it's not strictly divided by what we would say, okay, one's a comedy and one's a tragedy. I have a lot to say about Hamlet's antic disposition, for example, that he would have probably have been played at the time as a kind of clown in certain parts of the play. He's, you know, he's very punny.
Yes.
And he leaps around a lot, it seems. He's poking fun in order to make political commentary. So he does play the part of a clown, and then I think there's a lot of tragedy in Twelfth Night.
Wow, nobody thinks of Hamlet as a clown.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's interesting. We're speaking with Max Orr, you just heard him. Mary Floyd Wilson, chair of the English and Complete Department at UNC, is going to be the speaker at a distinguished scholar seminar called Shakespeare Plays with Mourning. That's mourning with a U. This Saturday, 9 to 4:30, humanities.unc.edu is the website for more information on that and many, many other events that are upcoming. I should mention your most recent book is one of the best titles I've ever seen for an academic work, Occult Knowledge, Science, and Gender on the Shakespearean Stage, which is fascinating and covers just about everything. I love it.
And it has a naked woman on the cover.
That is also true.
Never judge a book by a cover.
Except perhaps in this case when, like, yeah.
The title and the picture work together.
It's really good. And you mentioned this about sort of Hamlet being in the context of this sort of transforming view of the afterlife and death and change about, and changing beliefs about all of that. And that sort of reinforces the existentialness, right, of Hamlet, like the extent to which we don't know if there's going to be justice in the afterlife, so we have to make it happen now.
Yes and no. I think that it depends on sort of which angle you put the play at. The play is messy. When you said that David Garrick provided a kind of regularity, well, the most irregular of plays is Hamlet.
Yeah.
It's a complete, and this is in part because of the different versions of it, but it's also that it concludes in a way that's quite unsatisfactory, I think, for most people. So part of what Hamlet seems to say, right, is let be, that you can't know. So what more can you do?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't stop him from, throughout the play, questioning everything. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately it says that we can't know the answer.
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating. So tell me about the topics that are going to be discussed on Saturday.
So in the first lecture, I'm going to give two lectures on Hamlet and two lectures on Twelfth Night, and I think I'll alternate them.
If I could just interject one thing, I thought was really great when we got Mary to do this, is that we were looking for plays that are still being taught in local schools. So I think that's another really important reason. We're getting these really heavy topics, but these are accessible plays in the fact that at least that you're going to access them in schools. But please continue. I think that was a really important point.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I certainly want to give ways in for teachers to sort of hold on to so that they can bring students in to understand the plays. So that the first lecture will be focusing on interpreting the ghost, that the ghost is an epistemological question. And it also then affects the things I mentioned before about the nature of one's emotions and response and mourning. And then in Twelfth Night, I am going to talk about the nature of desire. I have this wild theory that's actually in that book that you mentioned, that the desire between the characters in that play is not based on the cross-dressing or gendering or even sexuality, but on hidden emotion, and that the main character of that play, Viola, begins the play thinking that her brother is dead and then veils herself, disguises herself. And so she becomes this kind of walking magnet of people are responding to her and they don't know why. And I think it's the hidden grief. And so it's working through grief in a different way. The third lecture will be on emotion, passion, and acting in Hamlet. Which is, it's a very meta-theatrical play, right? It has a play within the play. That's where I will talk mostly about the clowning, and that it is almost through acting that Hamlet makes it through the entire play. That's how he can get to the end, is through taking on a kind of clowning persona.
Mira, you don't know this, but we're actually having the ghost of David Garrick come in for that one, who's going to help with that one. So,
that would be helpful. Yeah, okay. I mean, maybe I can borrow whatever costuming he's bringing from the 18th century and use that in my own display. And then the last lecture, just so we can have some fun, is about festivity, and that is a response in some ways to the darker elements in the culture. I mean, people had holiday. Those two were being eradicated to some degree, but people did turn to partying, basically. And Twelfth Night is about both the ups and downs of that. There's a kind of trickery or play part in Twelfth Night that leaves kind of a stale taste in your mouth at the end, because they're mocking the one character who's anti-festive. So it sort of brings into question the rule and the role and the possibilities of festivity.
I also love this series of lectures just as a way of comparing and contrasting these two Shakespearean plays that I would never pull of the canon. I wouldn't pull those two out and say, oh, let's put these two together. But it's a really fascinating combination.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So humanities.unc.edu is the website to get more information. Again, this is going to be on Saturday, 9 to 4:30. And when you sign up, do you sign up for all four? Do you sign up for just one or more?
No, you sign up for all four. Okay. And I will say this, we don't give these gigs to people that can't do them. So I promise you, Mary Floyd Wilson keeps the room wrapped in attention the whole time.
I will jump around like Hamlet. I promise.
She has even worn fairy wings at a lecture before, but I don't know. Command performances, Mary, whatever you want.
Where is it going to be?
It'll be at the Center for School Leadership Development, but you do need to register ahead of time, so you do need to contact the website.
And again, humanities.unc.edu for more information on that and any upcoming events. Anything else that people need to know about this event or anything else upcoming?
Well, I have some great events coming up this week that I might just say. I will say an unfortunate circumstance, fortunate and unfortunate. We do need to talk about gun violence, but we are not promoting a talk on gun violence as part of this series. It just happened to be a timely coincidence. So we do have a really good talk on keeping guns. What's the title? Is Keeping Guns in Safe Hands, or I'm paraphrasing there, tomorrow at Flyleaf Books as part of that Humanities in Action series. It's I guess you kind of roll the die in America that every, 3 months or so it's going to be this coincidence. So we're glad we're having the conversation, but it certainly we don't want to seem to be like we're doing this for any other reason than we had already scheduled it. We also have yours truly will be presenting two lectures on the Bonaparte family on Thursday morning. So this is the second part of a four-part series I've done, A Labor of Love, talking about terrible people.
Yeah. Putting Hamlet's family to shame as far as terrible people are concerned. Yeah. Humanities.unc.edu for more information on that and many more. And again, sign up for Saturday from 9 to 4:30 with Mary Floyd Wilson. And Max, with one more thing.
I almost forgot. Humanities Happy Hour. Every third Wednesday.
Yes.
That's this Wednesday. We have a wonderful talk. Michael Palm coming and talking about vinyl records. So come to Back Bar in Chapel Hill, 6 o'clock Wednesday night.
Sounds good. Max Orr, thank you so much. Mary Floyd Wilson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.